Hello, this is your Sun Sounds volunteer reader, Mary McGrarty with Northland Views. I'll be reading articles from the Navajo Times and the Navajo Hopi Observer today. Some of the headlines have to do with Dine Strong after the fire, community rallies and graduation plans move ahead at Dine College. A record 22 students are honored with the seal of bilingual proficiency at Twin Arrows Casino. A visit by Secretary of Health Robert F. Kennedy to the Navajo Nation. Jonathan Nez discussion of issues with former congressional opponent Eli Crane. And Teresa Hetatli suggesting there's a reason for singling out sodas in making food stamp legislation. Let's begin with this article from the Navajo Times of Tuesday, April 22nd. Headline, Dine Strong, After Fire, Community Rallies and Graduation Plans Move Forward for Dine College. This is by Robert Bettis for the Navajo Times. Dateline, Tsalee, Arizona. In the days since a fire engulfed Dine College's student union building, the campus community has witnessed a flood of support from across Dine Bikeia, ensuring that students will still cross the stage at graduation despite the unexpected challenges posed by the destruction. We have received an outpouring of community support through encouraging words and even donations of food and money, said Chris Burnside, the Dine College spokesperson. We are going to continue to guide our students through classes and graduation through this time. We are currently working to finalize plans for replacement cap and gowns and rescheduling, but graduation will still happen one way or another. Many students shared on Facebook that the May 9th commencement ceremony will proceed as scheduled, though it has been moved to the Shiprock campus, where it will be held outdoors at 10 a.m. For many of the 138 graduating students, the fire represented not just the loss of a building, but added stress through uncertainty and lost resources. Cap and gown lost, but tradition endures. Business major McCall Jean was among those affected. His cap and gown, which had been waiting for him in the now destroyed bookstore, went up in flames along with much of the student union's contents. I was already planning to wear my traditional clothing below my cap and gown, so I guess I'll wear it instead, Jean said. It's not how I pictured it, but I'm still looking forward to walking that stage. His determination mirrors the wider Dine College student body, which has refused to let the fire derail academic progress. Nothing is going to stop me from graduating this semester, Jean shared with confidence. Campus operations shift to keep students on track. The college has implemented temporary measures to keep operations running. Cafeteria services have been relocated to Spruce Hall, transit routes adjusted to the Ned Hetatli Center, and virtual classes continue for students who can no longer access campus facilities. The weight room, a popular gathering spot for students and gym-goers like Jean, was among the facilities lost, leaving many without their usual workout space. But the community's response has been swift and selfless. Liz Tso of NMS is coordinating food donations, while cash donations are being managed through the college's financial aid office. On social media, messages of encouragement from students, staff, and supporters from all corners of the community have flooded in, offering moral support. Emotional support steps up amid uncertainty. Mental health counselor Travis Teller has been providing additional support at Residential Life, recognizing the emotional toll the fire has taken. Demolition of the damaged structure is expected to begin this week, with the full cleanup and rebuilding process projected to continue into late 2025. In the meantime, college administrators are working closely with Navajo Nation leadership to ensure that recovery efforts align with the needs of students and staff. Rebuilding ahead, but resilience remains. The strength of Dine College has always been its people, Burnside said. That hasn't changed. If anything, this has shown how much our community can come together when it matters most. As the campus prepares for commencement, the focus remains on celebrating what it means to be Diné strong, a popular phrase around campus that encapsulates community togetherness. For Gene, that means finding a new gym routine and adjusting his graduation plans, but never losing sight of what matters. "I'll figure out the rest," he said. "Right now, I'm just grateful we still get to have our moment on graduation day." Those wishing to support recovery efforts can contribute food donations at the Incident Command Center or monetary donations through the college's finance office. Updates on graduation and ongoing recovery plans are available through official Diné College channels. Now another article from the Navajo Times of Tuesday, April 22nd. "Our language is alive. Record 22 students honored with seal of bilingual proficiency." This is also by Robert Bettis for the Navajo Times. First published online April 10th. Beishati, in celebration of language and culture, outstanding students from across Diné Bikeya received the Navajo Nation Seal of Bilingual Proficiency during an April 4th ceremony at Twin Arrows Navajo Casino Resort in Twin Arrows, Arizona. A lead picture for the Navajo Times is Colton George of Piedra Vista High School wearing his Pendleton honor blanket after receiving his award, dedicating his achievement to his late mother, who inspired his language journey. The honor of the Navajo Nation Seal of Bilingual Proficiency recognizes the exceptional ability of these 22 students to speak, read, and write in Diné Bizaad, marking their dedication to preserving the Navajo language for future generations. Another very nice picture for the Times, taken by Robert Bettis, is of Monument Valley High's LaMarcy Clark, honored as the school's first ever recipient of the Navajo Nation Seal of Bilingual Proficiency, marking a historic achievement for her Utah community. The program, hosted by the Department of Diné Education, recognizes graduating high school seniors who demonstrate fluency in reading, writing, and speaking Diné Bizaad. Administered each spring by the Department of Diné Education's Office of Standards, Curriculum, and Assessment Development, the rigorous assessment evaluates students' language proficiency, with successful candidates receiving the seal near the end of the school year. The program underscores the Department of Diné Education's commitment to preserving and revitalizing the language for future generations. Now let's turn to some stories from the Navajo Hopi Observer of Wednesday, April 16th, beginning with this story from the community column. Headline, Jonathan Nez speaks out against former congressional opponent. This story is by Alexandra Wittenberg for the Navajo Hopi Observer. Former Navajo Nation President Jonathan Nez said he was pleased with the large turnout that came out to rally against Representative Eli Crane's local involvement in Flagstaff on March 24th. Nez ran against Crane for Arizona's 2nd congressional district in the 2024 election. "I spoke to a lot of folks who were laid off from the federal agencies. There was a lot of high emotion there," Nez said. "I appreciate people coming out, standing up to what's happening in this country." Nez said protesters were sending a message to President Trump and other leaders for not voicing their strong dissatisfaction with the current administration. In recent official statements, Nez mentioned that the U.S. House of Representatives' February cuts to Medicaid were a dirty deal that would be slashing health infrastructure in order to fund an enormous tax break for billionaires like Elon Musk, Trump's senior advisor and head of the Department of Government Efficiency, DOGE. DOGE plans staffing cuts to Indian Health Services, the Bureau of Indian Affairs, and the Bureau of Veteran Affairs. "I find these cuts to be not only a disservice to the general public, but a direct threat to the special relationship between tribes and the United States federal government," he said in a statement. This will severely impact the Navajo Nation, its members, and all tribal nations and those that do business with tribes across the country. Nez criticized Crane for not following through on his promise to fight for veterans and criticized both Crane and current Navajo Nation President Boo Nigrin for not advocating against layoffs and budget cuts. Nez said he knows it's a challenging time for the Democrats, being in the minority in power in the House and the Senate, but thinks Trump's policies are backfiring against Republicans, and they can step up against these injustices too. Although he was hopeful he would win his bid against incumbent Crane, Nez said District 2 as a whole is very conservative-leaning, in part because of an influx of conservatives leaving California and moving to Yavapai County. Though Nez is not currently an elected leader, he is still trying to make a difference. Being in the private sector with our company and also being a private citizen, it gives me an opportunity to go into events, he said. He noted another recent rally against the administration he participated in Crown Point, New Mexico. In Navajo, we say that in order to heal, you have to get all that frustration, that anger, that negativity out, Nez said. And I think these are, in my opinion, healing circles that are happening all across the country because they need to take this frustration. They need to share it so that they can get it out of their system because we really need this country to come back together and heal. You have to have hope for your country, he said. The people that are being hurt right now, the people that are losing their jobs, the people that are feeling the effect of the economy are Republicans, Democrats, independents, Christians, non-religious people, Nez said. Everyone is feeling the impact of what this administration is doing. And I hope that brings the unity to push back on what is happening in Washington, D.C. A movie, a podcast, and family. Nez currently helps his wife, Ophelia, with the Nez Consulting Firm. He said he believes everything happens for a reason. Since not winning a seat as a congressman, he is able to spend more time with his family, watching his sons play basketball and helping with school. I've been in public service for over 20 years. Now I get a chance to take a breather and hang out with the family, he said. Nez came out to support Fafilia, who was a panelist at the Coconino County College March 31st Matriarch Voices event, and the couple both spoke at the Flagstaff Mountain Film Festival April 5th during the Indigenous Voices session. Nez is featured in the 11-minute documentary Navajo Nation Reclaiming the Plate by the Oceanic Preservation Society. Nez talked about his personal health and wellness journey, going from 300 pounds to where he is today. The film follows Nez on a mission to heal his community by returning to traditional food and farming practices. Also featured is former Miss Navajo Nation Valentina Klitzo, who has also spoken to the crowd. Nez said they're hoping the documentary will be released as part of a larger Netflix project. In addition, Nez has started a podcast, Are You Ready?, which can be viewed on YouTube.com at Former Prez Nez. His debut episode last month featured his congressional campaign manager, James Gravatt, followed by a second episode with former U.S. Secretary of the Interior Deb Haaland. The podcast can be viewed at youtube.com/@FormerPrezNez. Now another article from the Navajo Hopi Observer of Wednesday, April 16th. Headline, Secretary of Health Robert F. Kennedy Jr. visits Navajo Nation. This is by Elise Fredericks and Rachel Taylor of the Office of President Nigrin. Dateline, Window Rock, Arizona. Against the backdrop of the iconic Window Rock Arch, Navajo Nation President Boo Nigrin sat on a sandstone cliff with U.S. Secretary of Health and Human Services Robert F. Kennedy Jr. and Council Delegate Jermaine Simonson to discuss critical health care access issues facing the Navajo people and the solutions rooted in sovereignty, tradition, and self-reliance. Secretary Kennedy, on a national tour, made a significant stop on the Navajo Nation to meet with tribal leaders, including President Nygren, First Lady Jasmine Blackwater Nygren, Speaker Crystalline Curley, members of the 25th Navajo Nation Council, and officials from the Navajo Department of Health. The purpose of the visit was to better understand how Navajo programs are maximizing federal resources to serve thousands of Navajo people across the nation. "I know that you're no stranger to Navajo," Nygren told Kennedy. "With your support and help, we will build the Gallup Indian Medical Center because it is in such need. It will expand to where we do not have to go to Albuquerque or Phoenix, and our people will have a world-class facility." The visit was deeply personal for Kennedy, who last set foot on the Navajo Nation 60 years ago alongside his father. His return began with a sunrise hike with tribal leaders from the base of the tribal capital to Window Rock. They were met with sacred prayer, traditional songs by a medicine healer, and ceremonial dances performed by the Diné Tá dancers at the Navajo Veterans Memorial Park. Nygren provided additional context about the urgent health priorities on the nation and the strain caused by the Indian Health Service's 30% vacancy rate. "As president, I want to emphasize the importance of protecting and maintaining tribal sovereignty among food and health care for the Navajo Nation," Nygren said. Kennedy expressed strong support, making a clear commitment to address staffing shortages and cuts in the Indian Health Service. By lifting the IHS hiring freeze and rescinding the hundreds of employee terminations, Secretary Kennedy said, it will not happen. Kennedy emphasized that the federal government must go farther to empower Native communities. "Today we learned many things that HHS could be doing to improve the condition of Navajo health," he said, adding that securing water will allow the Navajo people to build homes and become self-sustaining again. A final point of Kennedy's visit was the Navajo Nation's pioneering of the junk food tax, formerly known as the Healthy Diné Nation Act, passed in 2014 through grassroots mobilization by the Diné Community Advocacy Alliance. The law promotes healthy lifestyles and combats rising rates of diabetes and obesity. The Indian Health Service reports that 1 in 5 Navajo Nation residents lives with diabetes, and approximately 75,000 individuals are pre-diabetic. Revenues from the junk food tax have been redirected to support community wellness projects through the Navajo Division of Community Development, according to the Office of Navajo Tax Commission. Nygren also emphasized the need for formal tribal consultations to ensure that the trust and treaty responsibilities are upheld, especially as recent changes at the federal level have impacted social services. "We strive to live for 102 years as Navajo people, and also with your help and assistance, we look forward to reestablishing and protecting some of the services that your department provides," Nygren told Kennedy. In his closing remarks, Kennedy urged Nygren to continue his advocacy, not just for the Navajo people, but for all of Indian country. "The Navajo Nation is ready to lead, not only in promoting healthier lifestyles and wellness, but in shaping a future that honors our sovereignty, strengthens our economy, and secures our place in the global supply chain." Nygren added, "Secretary Kennedy's visit today shows that our voices are being heard at the highest levels. We're not asking for charity. We're reaffirming equity, and we're building solutions grounded in sovereignty and self-reliance. From staffing our clinics to constructing the new Gallup Indian Medical Center, the Navajo Nation is ready to lead." Now, some insights based on state politics, also from the Navajo Hopi Observer. Headline: Hatathli suggests there is a reason for singling out sodas. This is by Howard Fisher for the Navajo Hopi Observer. Dateline: Phoenix. State lawmakers gave final approval April 8th to two measures designed to promote public health, but not before exempting themselves from one of them. Without dissent, the Senate approved House Bill 2164 to eliminate certain artificial dyes and chemicals from what can be served and sold at public schools. That measure, already approved by the House, now goes to Governor Katie Hobbs. But House Bill 2165, a proposal to keep people from using their food stamps to purchase sodas, drew unanimous derision from Senate Democrats, particularly after their Republican counterparts refused to apply the same restrictions on the use of the taxpayer dollars they get in daily allowance for their expenses while attending the legislature. Both votes were purposely scheduled by the Republican Senate majority to occur Tuesday to coincide with a visit to the Capitol by Robert Kennedy Jr., the Federal Health and Human Services Secretary, specifically to discuss the measures. Kennedy has promoted both ideas at the national level as part of his Make America Healthy Again agenda. On Tuesday, he said health problems have been caused by corporations that re-engineered foods to make them not just tastier, but also able to get people to consume more, but without the nutrients. And Kennedy said there were other changes. One of the ways your brain tells you you're full is it counts the number of times you chew, he said. So they began adding softeners to the food that tricks your brain into never being able to tell your stomach that it is actually full. Kennedy also blamed a variety of other health conditions on additives, ranging from diabetes to autism. But he said he was not taking questions on other controversies related to not just the actions of his agency, nor on his own well-publicized statements on things like a recommendation that cities take fluoride out of their water, to raising doubts about the safety of vaccines. As to the current outbreak of measles, the only thing Kennedy would say is that his agency's strategy to deal with those cases has been very successful. The number continues to grow by the day, he said, but the growth rate has diminished substantially. In limiting questions to only food issues, Kennedy avoided addressing criticism by Will Humble, executive director of the Arizona Public Health Association, who said many of the actions Kennedy has taken are unwise and harmful. That includes urging citizens to remove fluoride from tap water. Some are destructive and possibly illegal, like his $240 million budget cuts for Arizona Public Health, said Humble, who previously served as the state health director. Some are downright dangerous, like his opposition to vaccines and promotion of therapies that don't work. It also comes as State Attorney General Chris Mays, along with Democratic counterparts in other states, has filed new lawsuits against Kennedy and his agency. One challenges $11.4 billion in cuts in public health grants, including about $239 million for Arizona. The administration countered that much of that dates back to the COVID pandemic and is a waste of tax dollars, responding to a non-existent pandemic that Americans moved on from years ago. More recently, Mays brought a new lawsuit after the Trump administration disrupted grant funding issued by the National Institutes of Health. On Tuesday, responding to Kennedy's visit, Mays said that he and Trump are exceeding their authority. We're victims of an unconstitutional intrusion on the rights of states and the power of Congress by an out-of-control executive branch, hell-bent on destroying 250 years of precedent, she said. The more immediate purpose of Kennedy's visit, though, was to praise the two measures that the Senate approved. But the Democrats took particular exception to Senate Bill 2165 to have the state determine what those who get benefits from the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program can purchase. At its core, this bill is paternalistic and judgmental, said Senator Lauren Kuby, Democrat of Tempe. This is food shaming. Senator Annalise Ortiz pointed out that the measure, as originally crafted by Representative Leo Biasiucci, also would have banned the use of food stamps for candies and sweets. That was dropped. I think it's safe that we can assume that HB 2165 is just one step in that there will be future bills that will attack other types of foods that people consume, said the Phoenix Democrat. And Senator Teresa Hatatli suggested that there was a reason for singling out sodas and not going after other items that would remain legally eligible to purchase with food stamps. Consider, said the Tuba City Democrat, breakfast cereals. What's affordable down that aisle are the sugary, huge bags of cereal, Hatatli said. Why are we not having that discussion about how capitalistic strategies prey upon working families and also families that receive these benefits? Asked about that issue, Kennedy did not disagree about the negative health effects of some of those items. You have to start somewhere, he said. Believe me, I would like to stop the entire processed food program, Kennedy said, but we're not going to do that overnight. Anyway, he said that about 10% of food stamp purchases are for sugary drinks, calling any effort to eliminate them from what's allowable the quickest and most obvious thing to do. And then there's the name of the program that includes the name nutrition, while sodas have none at all. If you're spending nutritional money that is paid for by the taxpayers to make our kids healthy and you're buying something unhealthy with it, then that needs to be corrected, Kennedy said. Hatatli, in debating the issue at the Senate, said if the issue is the inherent unhealthy aspects of soda and the use of public funds to purchase them, then the same rules should apply to the daily allowance that the lawmakers get to cover their expenses. That proposal gained support from Senator Priya Sundaresan. What we are talking about here is the inappropriateness or the appropriateness of providing taxpayer dollars toward the purchase of certain items, said the Tucson Democrat. And she told colleagues that if they believe tax dollars shouldn't be spent on unhealthy items, they should be consistent. That comparison drew an objection from Senator John Kavanaugh. We go down a very dangerous road when we tell people how to spend money, which is part of their compensation package, said the Fountain Hills Republican, who says that the daily expense allowance for lawmakers actually is part of their compensation. It's perfectly reasonable to tell people how to spend money when it's part of a welfare benefit, especially when the prohibition promotes their health welfare. No doubt we'll be hearing more of those controversies. Now, an uplifting story from the education page of the Navajo Hopi Observer headline. Navajo upbringing key to Veronica Miller's success in chemistry at Idaho State. Oh, just a quick summary, Dateline Pocatello, Idaho. Hajo inle. These two Navajo words were spoken to Veronica Miller countless times by her grandmother. Miller had heard the near-constant refrain to do it right while being taught how to process green thread plants for Navajo tea during her childhood. And for the future, she's planning to earn her doctorate and hopes to have a lab of her own focusing on inorganic chemistry, along with teaching and encouraging a new generation of chemists, including people, especially Native people from Native communities, perceive chemistry, said Miller. I want them to see its beauty, approach it without fear, and know that it's within their reach. Even when a class feels intimidating, my professor's confidence in me pushes me to believe in myself. That's the impact I want to have on future scientists. Thank you so much for listening. That's all we have time for today. For now, hagone.